You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt,
we have so little Star Trek news that the only kind of Star Trek news that is coming out right now is that poster for the new series that's been making the rounds on Twitter is not real, which we all knew wasn't real the moment that we saw it.
It looks like something I might have made in my desktop publishing class 20 years ago when I was in ninth grade. I mean, it looks nice enough, but it's not professional grade at all.
No, it's really not. And if they were going to make even for an in-house, pump up piece where it's just like, listen, crew, we're making a new start, they would not make that. And that is how little news we have. So little.
Anti-news. We got nothing, guys, and we're so excited and hungry for news that became news.
Even though we have the new Star Trek Beyond movie coming out that's, directed by Justin Lin and produced by JJ, there's not much information coming out about that. Usually, they kind of piecemeal the, images out or trailers out or news out or whatever, but they just really haven't been giving us too much, but... maybe our topic today could help supplement some of the lack of Star Trek news and lack of J.J. Abrams-verse news.
We're going to try and bridge the gap here. And what you're saying is we're going to envision Voyager in the J.J.-verse.
That's right, because this was a listener suggestion. We've gotten this actually a couple of times, so we can't give credit to just one single person, because over the years we've gotten this suggestion, but by the time we got it during our second AMA, we were like, okay, all right, we got to do this. We're going to make this happen.
Let's get it over with. Let's do this thing already. We've been shuffling our feet long enough.
Now, with this one, I want to make it clear to the listeners that we're not doing a recast. This is not a dream cast of who, if they were rebooting Voyager, who would play Janeway, who would play Neelix. We're not doing that.
No, we've done that.
That's right. We have done that. And you guys should go back and listen to it. But what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about, what the characters would be like, how they'd be written, how the show would be written, what the ship would feel like, and, the timeline and everything like that. And that is what we're going to talk about today.
Yes. And I think timeline is a very good place to start because this is an alternate timeline. So the whole thing with the JJ-verse is that it seems like everything is bumped up just a little faster, a little quicker because of what happens, starting with Nero and Kirk becomes captain faster. They kind of go through some of the things that happen in the 5-year mission a little faster if you read the JJ-verse comics. Mm-hmm. So everything is happening a little faster. And so with Voyager, getting Voyager kind of up to speed in the JJ-verse, I think might actually wreak a little havoc with the timing of things, because if you recall back to Caretaker, the Caretaker was pulling people from all over the place because he was dying. And if things are happening a little earlier and a little faster, and Voyager comes along, it might not be quite the same time as the Caretaker. We might be putting Voyager a little bit before that. And so that actually poses a little bit of a problem for us. Does it not?
See... okay, here's the thing. You and I had a wee bit of an argument, disagreement about this.
Yeah, it wasn't an argument.
before we started the show, it was just a wee bit of a disagreement because I am of the mind, you are just no, this is essential. We have to talk about this. And I'm kind of what does it matter? I'm kind of in my mind, if the Voyager show or just the entity of Voyager exists in the Abramsverse, I'm pretty much just thinking about what it would be like, because what Voyager is a Starfleet vessel called Voyager with Janeway, with Chakotay, lost in the Delta Quadrant by the caretaker. I don't really care too terribly much what year it takes place in, as long as those are the details that give me the new show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but no. Because I feel like timing is essential here, because Voyager would not have gotten out to the Delta Quadrant had it not been for the caretaker. Now, we could say, what if this bump is only a few years, and that means Voyager is a few years older, and so it's not a brand new ship, and Janeway is not she's a more seasoned captain in that sense. I wonder if that makes a difference. I mean, does that mean anything to you, or are you just, no, Char, just stop it, drop the timeline thing already?
Well, I don't know. I feel like if you want to focus on the characters, let's focus on the characters, because I'm just not agreeing with you. I feel like the timeline is as long as the caretaker brings Voyager to Janeway, because we can do whatever the hell we want. This is a reboot. This is just us putting Voyager in the Abramsverse. So all I'm thinking about is, you know, Abramizing Voyager. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh, okay, well, I know we're going to be painting the broad strokes of what this all looks like. So if you want to just go with that, we have to go with that. But I've kind of said my piece on the timeline. I don't think it matches up. And that's all. You can agree with me. You can disagree with me. Send me hate mail. I really don't care. But I figured we really should have addressed it. And so now that that's done, let's move on.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that you're wrong at all, because you are right, because things have changed drastically. There's no Vulcan. The Kelvin was destroyed. Yeah, exactly. So like we have to take that stuff into account.
I just thought of something. What if there is no Tuvok?
Well, that's the kind of thing that we can talk about. But
yeah,
for me,
I mean,
like what year Tuvok was born in doesn't matter to me, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, I mean, it. Never mind. Okay. I'm done with that. But being is how so many people died when Vulcan was imploded. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance that we don't have a Tuvok at all.
Before we get into the characters, let's talk about the ship, because that's a big thing with people. You know, like the Enterprise looks incredibly different from the original series. It looks incredibly different from the Enterprise A. And I feel like we should, you know, talk about this. And like, so when you see an Abramsverse Voyager, not the show, but the ship, what's the first thing that pops into your brain?
Two words, baby: ample nacelles. And I know that Daniel Prue right now is such a happy guy, and I did that just for him. But no, really, I think that is the big major design change, right? Or some ample nacelles. And I also see them, you know, flying. You know how like when Voyager goes to warp, they kind of move upward? What if they go downward to be a little sleeker and a little more?
Ooh.
Yeah, see, that's why.
Yeah.
That's
why. I like that.
That reaction.
I like that a lot.
So as far as that goes, I kind of see it as a sleeker ship, a little more beef with the nacelles for sure. And I kind of wonder what exactly a science vessel is going to be like in the Abramsverse. Because we had an Into Darkness. We had a huge destroyer of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to make little weenie science vessels?
I feel like once we get Star Trek Beyond, everyone's just going to pretend that Star Trek Into Darkness didn't happen.
Possible. That's possible, yes. And you know what? I'm willing to go along with that. I really am.
Yeah, me too. I think that's a great question. I think, like, this ship needs to still be a science vessel. I think this needs to be the most advanced science vessel we've ever seen. I want to see, like, that's the thing about the Abramsverse. Everything is amped up.
That is, yeah.
Bigger and better. Everything's shinier. Everything's faster. And also the characters, everybody's a super genius, not just a genius.
It's true. Like, they are the absolute 1% of whatever they are in their craft.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you see the exterior of the ship, are there any details that you want to mention besides ample nacelles? Do you think it's going to be different in any other way?
When I see it, I think this is a very long ship, a very long and skinny ship. I feel like...
Okay.
the nacelles are huge because they're ample, and they move down like you suggested because that's just cool. I see it more like the Prometheus hull, the primary hull of the Prometheus, but rounded.
Ooh.
So basically, if you take the Prometheus, you round it out, make it more like not as intense, not as circular as an Enterprise primary hull.
Uh-huh.
A nice midpoint between what the Prometheus triangle shape and the Enterprise circle shape. You keep the nacelles on the bottom like the Prometheus, but they can move up and down, and they're just a great deal bigger than the Prometheus. Like, because, you know, like by the time we got Prometheus and the Sovereign class, Enterprise-E and everything like that, they're really long and skinny. So I'm imagining like short and fat, but a long, skinny body.
Okay, interesting. In a weird way, like I can sort of see how that would balance the ship out, because I've talked with our design director, Aaron Harvey, about this, and sometimes the nacelles, I mean, it does seem kind of imbalanced on Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of like the landing legs where they seem a little too thin for what they're supposed to be doing. Whereas the ample nacelles balance everything out a little bit.
I feel like what would be cool is that when we see the ship land, that's the only time that we see the nacelles go up.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
Into like a 90 degree position up.
Or what if the legs come out of the nacelles and they land on the nacelles?
Hmm. We might have to talk to our nacelle expert on if that's actually possible or not.
Yeah. Daniel, please write in and let us know if that's possible.
Because if you look at the Enterprise D's nacelles, we actually got to see the inside of the nacelle, and there's no room for, a leg enclosure or anything like that.
Yeah. Not to say that it's impossible, just maybe, yeah, logistics-wise, we should have called in the expert beforehand. We really should have. Okay, well, I really like your design idea. I don't want to change that at all.
I think the reason why I came up with that is because it's the 24th century.
Yes.
And we need to think beyond the Abramsverse. We're like, this is a progression of the Abramsverse. So not everything needs to look exactly the same.
Right. And it's not going to be the same. I would say the more time goes by, the more variables you put in. I mean, it's that ripple effect, right? Where one thing changes and then suddenly you have a whole different universe. A lot of constants, but a lot of little changes along the way.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
When I think of the bridge, you know, Voyager kind of has a timeless look as it is. It's got a lot of chrome, neutral colors of blues and grays. But when it comes to the JJ-verse, I'm thinking whiter and brighter. Still with some of the monochromatic. I mean, it's going to be very, very bright and shiny and Apple Store on crack looking. With a couple of lens flares.
I was actually thinking the opposite. I was thinking, here's the thing. What the Abrams Enterprise bridge did for white, I would love to see the Voyager bridge do for black and chrome.
But it's going to be very dark looking.
But that's the thing that I've always enjoyed, because in Voyager, when they go to red alert, what happens?
It goes dark, and all you see is red light.
All you see is red light, and so all you can see is their, is their instruments. I feel like with Voyager being a science vessel, you know, they would like their instruments are everything, and so they would want a little bit darker all the time.
It gives me a weird visual of like the people who just sit in their basement all day on their computers. I don't know if I like that.
We don't have to go with it. I'm just saying that's where my brain went. I don't know if we should go stark white though, because. You know, like the Enterprise did that, so I feel like we need to do something different. But I like the monochromatic, you know, like feel that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not saying go full-blown like the Enterprise JJ bridge, but I do feel like you would still have the bright and vibrant colors in it. And you would have, I would say, for the monochromatic elements, to accent it and balance it out, if that makes any sense. I mean, it's really hard to describe, but I see it in my head. Where it just works. It's bad for podcasting, great for my brain. Where it's very futuristic looking because it's so vibrant, because it is so shiny, and it's got that timeless feel though still to it. And I think you don't have carpeted floors.
No.
Nope. You don't. I don't think there's carpet in the JJ verse.
I love that there's carpet in the Prime universe. I do. I absolutely love that everything is carpeted. I love it.
I'm neither here nor there on it, but I don't see it in the JJ verse. So I think that's my big picture thing for the bridge is no carpet.
Okay, so engineering.
Yeah.
This pissed off a lot of people. And you know what? Rightly so. In the first Abrams movie, it looked like a brewery because that's where they filmed it. It was a brewery.
It really was a brewery, yes.
And then the second one, they went in a completely different direction and had this gigantic sphere that reminded me of the beryllium sphere on Crack from Galaxy Quest.
Uh-huh.
And it just, the size just didn't match up with the interior of the ship. So I feel like we could do whatever the hell we want with a, with a Voyager 24th century Abrams verse engineering.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe you would see more of a typical, maybe you would see more of a typical engineering set that we're familiar with a nice throbbing warp core at the center of it all. But maybe you see a little more functionality, like we did with the brewery version of the JJ verse, where you see water tubes and just general logistics of things that you would need to have working on a starship besides the warp core. Mm-hmm. So things like water reclamation systems and, I don't know, plasma conduits, things that we hear about all the time that we don't necessarily see. I think maybe that might be a little more obvious in a JJ-verse engineering room.
I like that idea of like that kind of stuff being accessible and being able to see it in engineering. For some reason, I've imagined three warp cores all horizontal like an Enterprise, where I love the idea of a horizontal engine, a horizontal warp core, because it's easily accessible. Every single inch of it is accessible because it's horizontal, and that way you don't have to take up vertical space.
Right.
I just to add some new age Abrams stuff to it, you just add multiple ones, and so people are like, why are there multiple ones, you know? Like, so I don't know. And because if you looked at the it could be, with the 09 Star Trek movie, they had, like, when they said eject the core, they shot out like 60 little mini warp cores.
True. Yeah,
so maybe with this one they're bigger but fewer.
Okay, yeah, that could show kind of more advancement in technology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm a huge fan of a horizontal warp core unless there's some logistical reason where propulsion is more efficient that way or something. I've always liked a vertical warp core.
Well, I like it too, but I just think it would be it'd be nice and different. And I just gave you a logistical reason on why it was horizontal.
Yeah.
All right, I let you have your bridge, which you couldn't even describe.
Yeah,
so you're
going to
give me horizontal warp core.
Fine, you get this one. You win.
Thank you.
Okay, so that more or less takes care of engineering. What other big things do we need to see? What about sickbay?
I feel like sickbay, I've always felt like sickbay was too small. Now, granted, it's a small ship.
Yeah.
But obviously, since it's going to be an Abrams ship, it's going to be much bigger.
Or at least we're going to have the visual, the feeling, the illusion that it's bigger.
The illusion that it's bigger. So I see sickbay as basically just bigger, and where you have an open triage area like they do now in Voyager, but you also have individual rooms for privacy, and the dock has an actual office.
Here's another idea I thought of as well. And this is just something I completely made up, but what if science vessels in the JJ-verse are almost double as medical vessels, where they're conducting research, both scientific and medicinal? So what if sickbay is a lot bigger, and what if it's it's a lot more room, and there's a lot more going on, where it's not just triage and surgery, but it's also research and moving advancements forward in science while they're out there in space.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think with it, like, that would put more emphasis on it being a science vessel, that where we do research and we also do medical research. So because we do medical research, we need medical facilities. And I'm thinking something much more akin to, I keep coming back to this, but I like when I picture it, I picture the Prometheus sickbay, but like with shorter ceilings and a little bit wider.
Okay, why shorter ceilings? Just because of the Prometheus?
it's a complete waste of space is why, because like in Prometheus you had such vaulted ceilings. Why on earth would you need vaulted ceilings in a medbay?
It's absolutely true. There's no good reason for that, but I also don't want, like, whenever I think of shorter ceilings, I feel like I'm in an office building where it's just a bunch of fluorescent lighting and you just feel like you're claustrophobic and surrounded.
Well, just shorter than Prometheus, so just average size, average ceilings.
Okay, thank you. That makes me feel better.
You're welcome.
But
yeah,
so I think,
I like that idea. I like
that idea. So a much bigger sickbay, a lot more going on, and if Voyager is indeed stranded in the Delta Quadrant and has still lost its CMO, and it's up to the Doctor to run it, he needs more personnel. And that's not to say that everybody might have gotten killed, but what if they lost several people, a lot of nurses, the chief medical officer? Well, that raises the question of maybe, you know, people like Tom Paris, who have two semesters of biology, suddenly needing to be field medics. And maybe there's more people that have to be recruited to do the job of managing sickbay.
Absolutely. I think we'll definitely see more medical professionals in this version. Now, one thing that I think we need to talk about, the one other set piece that I think we need to talk about is stellar cartography.
Oh, yes.
I feel like it would be much more like the stellar cartography we got in Generations than what
huge.
We got in Voyager. Just
yes.
gigantic, and they're moving around, like it moves around them. You know, it's just like you're basically in a holodeck.
Yeah, ginormous, huge screen, definitely more of the cinematic capability rather than what we could do for TV, definitely.
Right.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. We want it to be gi-freaking-normous, serving great purpose while they're stranded out there in the Delta Quadrant. They've got to analyze all that data.
So how about we move on to the crew? Let's go down the list. Obviously, we're going to spend more time on some than others. So we got to start at the top, Janeway. Who is Abrams Janeway?
Well, since she is still captaining a science ship, maybe she has more scientific prowess than what we got on the actual show, where she sort of, I don't know, she sometimes seems to be selective in how much she remembers she's a scientist. But of course she's a badass. So I'm just making her even more science-y, but I would say the JJ Captain Kirk is also a little more fearless and a little more willing to take risks, which sometimes gets him into trouble. I feel like Janeway would be very much the same way, because Janeway does have a lot in common with Kirk as it is. So if this is the kind of Starfleet that we've kind of started out with and is sort of a continuing trend, that's sort of how Janeway is going to be, I think, as a leader.
Yeah, I think so too. Also, you know, I think she'll be ripped. We'll see her arms way more than just once.
Yeah.
I think she will have like Michelle Obama arms.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a necessary for the Abrams verse. Hey, I don't make the rules. I'm just telling you
just
what
they following are. Following up. Yeah, you've got to have the Michelle Obama arms and like the Jillian Michaels abs.
Yeah,
just
I think
totally
that's definitely going to happen.
Ripped, yeah. Because everybody in the JJ verse is freaking just incredibly fit and good looking. It's
and
ridiculous.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, if we were doing an Abrams macrocosm, you know, like her shirt would get ripped to expose her six pack.
Yeah, but she'd be walking with that rifle, her midriff exposed. Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. That's what we would get.
Awesome.
So, but the Janeway, the person, what really matters. Yeah, I definitely see her being a little bit more of a hothead, a little bit more fearless. But I like, and obviously, like, she's not just a scientist; she's like one of the best scientists in Starfleet.
Yeah,
she rose to captaincy because she is not just a good leader, but friggin' smart. And they needed a brainiac for this mission.
Yeah. And I think just like Voyager wasn't really intended to go to the Delta Quadrant, she was going to head up a great mission in the Alpha Quadrant that required her expertise, whatever that was.
Yeah, we don't know what that was.
We can make it up later. But that's why she became a commander, because she has the great science background and then sort of kind of got a little veered over into being a leader.
Yeah. That's exactly what I see. And I think that's what we'd see, and it I feel like because this is the Abrams verse, I feel like she would be much more daring with Chakotay.
I feel like these two in the JJ verse are going to be much more at odds with one another.
Yes.
And very, very daring. And they're going to speak their minds on a very regular basis, like pretty much every time they're in the ready room. And they're going to clash all the time. And yet they're still going to love each other.
I feel like because of this universe, that you're absolutely right. There's going to be so much more friction. There's going to be more screaming. There's going to be more arguments. There's going to be more my crew, your crew kind of conversations.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But at the same time, the sexual tension will be palpable. And it's going to be one of those moments that they always do in TV and movies where they're screaming at each other, furniture's thrown up against the wall, and then all of a sudden they just start making out.
I envision in Janeway's ready room where the chairs are all toppled over and the coffee cups are on the floor at this point, but they're making out on the couch.
Yeah, and somehow, like her shirt gets ripped again, and we see her abs. And,
and his shirt is ripped too. She ripped it off.
I love that. It's just that, like, if Janeway's already a little bit like Kirk, let's make her even more like Kirk, and like any excuse to show her abs, she'll take.
Yeah. She has the abs, and she's not afraid to show them. Well, I mean, this falls right in line with the JJ verse, right? Everything is so amped up.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and move on to Chakotay then.
Okay.
I picture him younger.
I agree.
I picture him a great deal younger, where we have a little, like, maybe that adds a little bit to the sexual tension and the relationship between the captain and Exo, where he is a fine leader. He's experienced. He led the Maquis, but he's younger than the Chakotay we know. And so even though this would by no means be taboo in the 24th century, but for some reason in our culture, I have no idea why, it's okay for men to date or be interested in younger women, but it's still kind of taboo for an older woman to be interested in a younger man. So I would love to see that played on screen.
Mm. How much younger are you thinking? I mean, because really, Chakotay, I think, is a little bit older than Janeway, just by a shred, if I'm recalling correctly.
I'm thinking like 10 years.
10 years? Okay, yeah. So enough for a good sizable difference. But yeah, so what? Yeah. I'm thinking Chakotay is also much more of the angry warrior at this point in his life.
Well, in order to get that friction, we're going to need him to be angrier.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, he's come to absolutely no peace in his life. He's very discontented, especially with the situation he's in now where he has no real control over anything. He's not even on his ship anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that absolutely happening.
That's going to bring up a lot of great issues, but potentially great for Chakotay.
I'd like to see him interact with the crew more. Like, I'd like to see him do his Exo duties more and more in the Abramsverse, and maybe be a little bit gruffer. Like, instead of being that kind, gentle person, like, he still has that side, but at the same time, like, if you're not doing your job, he's going to tell you that you're not doing your job. There's no coddling, no nothing. It's get it done. And get it done right now.
Yeah, you know, that's very much in line with the JJ verse. If you're not getting it done, then you're pretty much out of there. I mean, that's kind of how Uhura became the communications officer. That other dude didn't know all the dialects of Romulan. So in she goes. She's elected. That's it. That's all it takes. So I like that, where he's going to be very firm and say, hey, you are not meeting the bar here. You got to step it up, or I'm going to get somebody else in here. And I like the idea of him being more hands-on.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so how about we move on to B'Elanna?
Okay, B'Elanna. Well, if we're going to amp her up, she's going to be a lot angrier.
Well, we can't make everybody angrier.
I know, and I feel like we're kind of becoming a broken record here. So how are we going to make B'Elanna different? Now, the Klingons aren't exactly friendly people in the JJ-verse. What if there is a little bit of tension between Klingons and humans still in the JJ-verse? It's not something we know that's going to happen for sure in the 24th century. This is all speculative. What if, because she was a Maquis, there's a little bit of racism involved on the Starfleet crew's part?
Well, I don't want to specifically say racism, but I feel like what we saw in The Next Generation and what Worf went through, and what he went through so that B'Elanna didn't have to because he was a trailblazer, I feel like that's what we show with B'Elanna in this Abramsverse, what Worf went through.
Okay, so kind of as the first Klingon Starfleet officer, basically, although she is doing it reluctantly.
Yes, yeah, maybe that's what she is. She's the reluctant first Klingon officer in the Abramsverse. I feel like in order to make her a little bit different, instead of just making her angrier and making her amped up, I feel like she could be our Chekhov, our Wunderkind.
Okay, she's got to be a mad genius. I'm cool with
that. Yeah, she's a mad genius, and like Chakotay met her when she was super young. Like she was like the Wesley of the Maquis.
Yeah, I like it. Wow.
She was around at a very young age because her maybe her parents were killed during the Maquis squabble with the Cardassians, and so she enlisted right away. And so she's grown up within the Maquis, and that's all she's ever known.
So you're kind of combining Wesley Crusher with Tasha Yar's history and turning it into B'Elanna.
And Chekhov's smarts. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, okay. Interesting. I like that.
And also, and her ridges would be super pronounced.
Right, and she'd have a whole bunch of body jewelry.
Yes.
Yeah, she'd have a nose ring and a couple of ridge rings.
And blue eyes for some reason.
Why not?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's our B'Elanna.
So how about the EMH? Are we going to assume that there are holograms in the 24th century in the JJ-verse? We kind of have to, right?
I think we absolutely have to, but I think we could even make it a little bit crazier where in Hope and Fear, Arturis talked about synthetic matter.
Okay, yeah.
Instead of holograms. And it's like, he's like, Janeway, you wouldn't understand. What if we played with that a little bit more? You know, it's like just to add a little bit more craziness into it where it's not holograms and the Doc isn't a hologram, but he's a synthetic person. Not like an android in Alien, but some sort of advanced projection.
That would be kind of cool. And we're not going to go into huge specifics here. We're just painting broad strokes, but it would be really interesting if maybe this is still a technology that they've had, but they're still developing it. And this is all sort of like an evolving experiment. What if this is something that they're doing on Voyager? Is they're evolving this technology as they go?
Yeah. Maybe that's our gel packs, is this synthetic matter instead of holograms. You know, like you know how the gel packs were brand spanking new and field tested on Voyager?
Yeah.
This is that.
Yeah, yeah, I totally dig that, and you could still somehow mess up the cheese. There's plenty of things that you can do with that. So I really like that idea, and then that gives the Doctor potential for error. It's possible that they could lose him, and so that's a huge risk, seeing as how he's a CMO, and so they've got to protect him. It's a grave risk, and yet they need to keep this technology going so they learn it and they know how to use it the best that they possibly can. And, of course, keep their Doc around.
I feel like not much should change with the Doc's personality, though, because I feel like he's already amped up. You know,
yeah,
like
I don't want to change him. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I feel like his personality and his smarts are already on par with the Abramsverse.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's cool.
Let's talk about Tuvok. Now, we mentioned this a little bit. There's no Vulcan. No matter what timeline we're in, there is no Vulcan by this.
Right.
So we have
two options. He's either not there because he was never born, because Vulcans are an endangered species, pretty much, or he is a Vulcan, and that is a very big freaking deal because Vulcans are not exactly common. Is it wise for him to be on, maybe, let's say Voyager was going to a deep space mission. Is that wise for an endangered species to be going out here with the potential to be killed and then, of course, gets lost in the Delta Quadrant? I'm sure the Vulcans are going to love that.
Yes, yes. I think that's the route that we need to go, is that he's his parents were survivors.
Okay.
Let's give him the backstory of Tuvok is the first generation to not just focus on rebuilding the species. It's kind of like having immigrant parents where your parents moved to the new world and everything was new, everything was harder, but you are the first generation to be born in that new world. I think that would be an interesting take for Tuvok to be that.
Absolutely. That's a completely different dimension from our Tuvok. It would give him a really cool backstory. And of course, he's going to be torn between wanting to please his parents, who probably want him to help continue rebuilding because it's far from over. And yet, you know, let's say what survived of the Vulcan Science Academy, he feels compelled to do this work. It's his dream. That's what he wants.
And also, with this, he has multiple wives.
Ooh. Okay. Because of repopulation?
Because of repopulation. They change the rules. They're logical beings. And if they're like, the best way that we can, you know, repopulate the species is if we had multiple wives, or even like they make it more like the Denobulans, where each, you know, like wives have multiple husbands and husbands have multiple wives. There's no need for monogamy, even if they had thousands of years of tradition of monogamy. They're like, okay, we're a logical race. The best way to go about is if there's an imbalance in sex, then we need to have the men be able to repopulate with more women than just their wife or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I like this idea because it's not limited just to the men basically just spreading their seed to whomever and impregnating everybody. I like the idea of having the wives also take multiple partners because I'm thinking logically it's going to be IGIC. Infinite genetics and infinite combinations. They need to diversify what they have of their gene pool as much as possible. That means multiple mates across the board.
So we'd have more half-sisters and half-brothers and quarter-brothers and everything like that,
yeah,
than full-blooded
so
brothers
Vulcan
and sisters.
Family, yeah, life is about to get a lot more complicated. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel like that's something that we can explore.
Yeah. So that would be kind of interesting. So maybe when Tuvok disappears, he's not leaving just one wife and his children. He's leaving three wives and who knows how many children.
Ooh, and we could also introduce where, because if, like, in the Abramsverse, you have Spock and Uhura, what if interspecial relationships become taboo within Vulcan society because they are so focused on perpetuating their bloodline,
ooh,
that they need as many full-blooded Vulcans as possible? So Tuvok has multiple wives back home, but yet he has a love interest on Voyager, and he has to fight against it because he doesn't want to risk having
And that's going to get extremely difficult when he's going through Ponfar.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to have to be his struggle. And then maybe B'Elanna can help him through that. Not physically, but
really?
Yeah, but like, you know, she's half Klingon, she's half human. She says, you know, like, if my races acted like yours, I would never exist.
True.
You know, like, that's how she can help him out, that kind of thing. I feel like, even though we need to keep broad strokes, but holy crap, I want to write down this characterization for Tuvok in the Abramsverse.
Yeah, well, you know, we did do a Mirror Universe story or two after we created a broad stroke picture, because that's how we started the Mirror Universe on Voyager. Maybe eventually we revisit this and we do more backstory on Tuvok. Although we just wrote an episode on our Prime Universe Tuvok, so we might need to wait a little bit.
So how about we move on? Let's move on to Neelix. I think this is going to be the first CGI character in Star Trek history.
Okay, let's make it happen. I like it. As long as he's not the Jar Jar of Voyager.
Right, like he won't be the Jar Jar of Voyager, and he won't be Species 8472, but he's a main character, and I'm thinking, like, I don't know, you don't want to make him too ugly, but you want to make him different enough that would warrant CGI. Now, obviously, this would not be possible on a TV budget. You know, like, so much of this wouldn't be possible on a TV budget. But we're just spitballing here. We're just having fun.
Yep.
For some reason, I always figured alternate universe Neelix would be big.
Okay. Like a Hagrid big?
Yeah, like Hagrid big. He would be the tallest person on the ship.
Okay, that's kind of cool. We don't get many giants.
He would be a giant. He'd be alien. I want to say something like a smooth reptilian. I don't know.
Reptilian, huh? Okay. That would be cool CGI. Give him some scales, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. Like frog-like mixed with a turtle or something. I don't know. Something crazy like that where it would make his relationship with Kes that much weirder.
Great, we need that. Yeah. But, I mean, if we're going to amplify everything in the JJ-verse, that is sort of what needs to happen. So it does kind of follow suit. Now, what about Kes? What is she going to be like? Is she going to be a pixie waif?
I think she's going to continue to be a pixie waif, but I feel like she's going to have her powers to begin with.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Like, she's going to be like Jean Grey of Star Trek.
I like that. Yeah, you're going to have, like, a literal Beauty and the Beast kind of thing going on.
Yes. Very much so.
So, that's cool.
We have this very powerful Belle who is, you know, like, who can do telekinesis, telepathic powers, and everything like that, just right off the bat, saying, like, I only live 9 years, but I am awesome in those 9 years. You know, like, it's, like, I could do crazy things.
Yeah, and not only does she have her abilities just to begin with, but she's got a lot more of them, and they're developed.
And she's a good fighter.
Okay, cool, okay.
That's what I see.
All right.
Is that like maybe that's the Neelix and Kes route where maybe Neelix didn't save Kes, but Kes saved Neelix.
Oh, that would be kind of cool. Or maybe like instead of Neelix and Tuvok being buddy cop, as we put in an episode not that long ago, it's Kes and Neelix. They're the buddy cops and they were out there doing their thing on Neelix's ship and braiding debris and getting away with things they shouldn't be getting away with and all that. Bonnie and Clyde, basically.
Yes, a little Bonnie and Clyde, a little outlawish, you know, like a little dangerous. Not the meek and quiet and understanding Kes and Neelix that we got.
Yeah.
You know, like we keep saying, these amped up versions. And so, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's all right. Cool. I dig it.
So we have two more people that we need to talk about. Let's talk about Ensign Harry Kim. Now, I feel like I might have wasted my Wunderkind card. Not wasted, but maybe it sucks because we can't have two Wunderkinds on the show with that kind of backstory.
It's not fair.
Your gut reaction might be Harry, but I still like keeping it with B'Elanna. So what is different about Harry? I don't see too terribly much different about Harry.
Maybe not. Maybe he's just forever doomed to be the Green Ensign, has to learn the ropes. Maybe he was on Voyager as sort of like the science intern, but as out of necessity, he had to become an officer.
Yes. Yes.
So he's thrown into his job. And that's why Harry is so completely just not with it. Although he is a wonderful friend.
Yes.
Has no luck with the ladies and is very socially awkward.
I love that. I love that idea. That there you go. That's Harry Kim. Is that like he was an intern? Like maybe he was a cadet and like everybody above him.
Yeah, like a second-year cadet. You know, he has.
He was doing his dissertation.
Or actually, no, we ought to make him like a third or fourth year cadet. Second year is too soon for an internship.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like doing the final stage before graduating Starfleet Academy. And so he's not quite ready, but he's close.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Okay, that's cool. That's Harry. One more person, and that is Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy. I see him. The first thing that popped in my head when I thought about Tommy Boy in Abrams versus, he's a fighter pilot.
Fighter pilot? And yes. See, I saw him as like the Kirk drunk who's hanging out at the bar getting in fights.
That's our mirror universe, Tom.
Oh, that's true. He is. I guess we can't copy that, can we? Okay, fighter pilot it is.
I say he's a fighter pilot who was so good, so crazy that like he just lost control in a war zone and there was way too much collateral damage. And so that's why he was cached out of Starfleet.
Mmm, a little too overeager, huh?
Yeah, he's overeager. He has an itchy trigger finger, but he's the best pilot out there.
Okay, I can go with that. That makes a lot of sense in the JJ verse. It's still true to Tom Paris. He still has the rough past. And he's the one who's still going to be the guy to kind of mellow out.
Right.
You know, he starts out rough on the edges, but then... Do he and B'Elanna still get together? Let's just say yes.
Maybe we get a weird relationship between Chakotay and Tom, where because they both are similar now in their personalities, that they rub each other the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah. And Chakotay's not going to like it when when Tom and B'Elanna get together. So there's going to be some issues there.
Yes, that is a genius idea, where Chakotay is more of like a father figure instead of a big brother.
Yeah. Because B'Elanna is so young, that makes sense.
Yeah, so we have a young Chakotay and even younger B'Elanna, and then Tommy Boy with his walking hormone coming around.
Yeah.
And Chakotay's just like, no, none of this.
Yeah, oh, forget Neelix's jealousy. We're going to have Chakotay on the warpath.
And then as the years go by, as the seasons go by...
Tom's going to prove himself to Chakotay, and Chakotay's going to trust Tom.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool!
Let's talk about the Seven of Nine introduction in the Abramsverse. So it's a couple years later.
Yeah, okay.
Does she still replace Kes? Or does she replace somebody else?
Ooh, it could go either way.
I feel like it would be a nice nod to the fans if Harry Kim died for real and Seven of Nine was brought on because originally the rumor was that they were going to get rid of Garrett Wong instead of Jennifer Lee.
Right, right.
And so what if that actually happened in this version because it's an alternate universe?
Oh, wow. So the Green Ensign, the moment he does a heroic deed, goes all out and manages to save the ship, he's going to die.
So Harry Kim is dead, for realsies.
At the end of season three? Do we want to say that?
Yeah, I say at the end of season three, okay. Seven of Nine comes on in the same way, you know, like they're going through Borg space. They steal Seven of Nine instead or something like that. And but so who is Abrams versus Seven of Nine?
Is she still an ex-Borg?
I think she's still an ex-Borg.
Okay. Because, I mean, a big gap we're going to have here is how much do we know about the Borg in the JJ-verse?
I feel like nothing. Because that makes it more interesting. Nothing at all. And so we have a completely different Borg species to deal with. For whatever reason, you know, the Borg never got interested. Maybe Q never interacted J.J. Abrams' Picard, and so they never introduced them to the Borg. Maybe that's the thing, is that Janeway was the first captain to meet the Borg because they're in the Delta Quadrant.
Okay, that's huge, and that's like the whole, I'm so scared, I'm going to crap my pants, scary Borg again.
Yes, absolutely. Like, we make the Borg scary again in the Abrams verse.
Ooh, I like it.
I'm thinking like a mixture of the Borg that we've seen and like machines from the Matrix.
Okay, I can kind of envision that.
Yeah, that's what I see. Like, they don't just have one singular humanoid entity at, like, you know, like where they're walking around and they got the eyepiece and everything like that, but they have multiple versions. Like, they have animals that they've assimilated for their beasts of burden. You know, they have quadrupeds assimilated. They have all different types of species assimilated, and
it's they assimilate craziness. Everything.
They're just a force of nature, even more so than what we've seen before. And I, for some reason, I picture Borg, instead of having one Borg cube be intimidating, we have several Borg ships that almost look like a swarm. Like, they go and they hover around a planet, encapsulate it, and then drain it of its material, then move on to the next one.
Sort of like Independence Day, then.
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
Ooh, okay. I can go, so they come out of the mothership and then they swarm and assimilate and conquer and move on.
Exactly. Now, we've described the New Age Borg. Let's describe a New Age Seven. The problem with Seven is that she's already kind of an Abramsverse character because she's super attractive, buxom, super the smartest person on the ship.
Yep.
And she's a badass. So what could we do differently? She has a Furiosa robotic arm, like in Mad Max.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's cool. That's one thing is they can't quite shake off all of her implants, and so that's something that she'll have forever. Yeah. Boy, Seven in the JJ verse is a little difficult because she is so amped up already. I'm wondering if we really need to change a whole lot at all. I mean, do we make it maybe more difficult for her to adapt to being a humanoid life form and being around humans? Or is she human at all because the Borg don't know that much about humans?
Oh, that's true. She can't be human. So she's not human, but maybe she's just I think we still need to make her a humanoid.
Wait a minute. What if her parents, for whatever reason, they were scientists and they were out in the far reaches of wherever and still encountered the Borg, but we heard nothing about it. We just knew that ship disappeared, never to be heard from again. And the big discovery is that, oh my God, she's human.
I think that's a great idea, but my initial resistance is, why wouldn't the Borg investigate why this random species is there and go find out where they are and find out where they're from and try to find more?
I see your point.
That's the only kink in the armor, I think, because other than that, like, them finding out, holy crap, she's human, would be much more of a revelation than when it was in our Voyager.
Right. Yeah, although I do agree that they would assimilate them and realize, oh, these guys are from blah, blah, blah in the Alpha Quadrant. More people to assimilate. Although, what if they just decide to focus on what's in front of them and then eventually we're going to get there. We know they're there now. That's great. Mm. But we got these guys, so we're good for the time being.
So we could keep her human if we did that. And then, but we had to give some sort of reason as to why they didn't pursue assimilation of the human race. Since Seven's already amped up and we don't want to change too much about her, we gave her a Furiosa arm. I think her outfits would be much more tactical.
Can we give them a little more purpose besides being a cat suit? That would be
like, it wouldn't be a cat suit. It would be something very utilitarian. It would be very, like, everything on her has a purpose. Everything on her, like, nothing on her is decorative.
I like that.
She always has her tricorder on her. She always has her Hydra spanner on her. You know, like she always has all of, I think I just mixed Star Trek and Star Wars technology. But everything that she needs, like her food supplements, is on her, like in her pockets, like, you know, just everywhere.
I like it. So she sort of has like a tool belt and all sorts of things going on here.
She's basically Batman. We'll make her Batman. That's what we'll do.
Seven is Batman.
Like she has a
Batman. You know, that's impossible coming from you, sir.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, I think that's enough of a change. So that I'm cool with that. All right. So I think
there you go.
For a broad stroke envisioning of the JJverse, I think we have a bigger picture set.
I think we could definitely build off of this in the future. I mean, we have our mirror universe and now we have our Abramsverse. And so I feel like we could write episodes on the fly on both of them now.
Oh, good grief. We're going to be in so many different universes at this point where it's going to get mind-boggling.
It's going to be hard to keep track, but hopefully the listeners will be able to.
Yeah, keep track for us because we might lose ourselves in the midst of it. So Voyager in the JJverse isn't the only thing that we're talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is going on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You've heard Chief Tripp sign on. I'm serious, Ken. Actually, out of the chair, please.
Okay. God.
I guess the Commodore has the con!
Earl Grey.
Did you really write down Groppler Zorn on this list?
I was just kidding.
This is before he achieved Groppler rank.
He was only a Soplar. He wasn't a Groppler lad.
What fruit did he like before he got to apples?
The orb.
I want to hear Worf give a command sometime like 1/4 ramming speed. And then yes. Someone says, Captain, regulation specifically states that we cannot go at 1/4 ramming speed while we are in orbit of a planet.
The Ready Room.
To what extent is this episode, the writers and producers of Deep Space Nine turning the mirror back at the fans? You know, I mean, I think all of us Star Trek fans at one point or another probably retreat into this universe we love, Star Trek, that is, it's a fictional world.
What are you talking about, Zachary? Are you suggesting that, like, fans might decide to buy microphones and, like, talk about it like it's real for hours on end?
To the journey!
Next one in line is Spirit Folk, and we already agreed that that is just not necessary for anybody, and let's not torture them with it. Good, let's move on.
The characters in the Fairhaven Hollow program begin to suspect the Voyager crew after they witness several supernatural occurrences. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Tokyo Drift really is the perfect subtitle. Like, you could literally put Tokyo Drift onto the end of any movie, and it would instantaneously become a movie that you would have to see. Citizen Kane, Tokyo Drift.
The 602 Club.
I hate it when shows that are grounded in reality, but obviously they're not, and they have their characters go through socially important experiences.
Literary Treks.
It is very much every one of the characters, you know, who finds themselves sort of pulled into the conflict that's the heart of this story. They are reacting to a fear of the other.
Meta Treks.
I'd love to answer your question, but I can't get the visual image out of my mind of B. Arthur and Betty White in Starfleet miniskirts and go-go boots.
I can totally picture the Golden Girls as Klingons.
Melodic Treks.
What I decided to do was not only would I pick a 6 degree of separation, not only would I do it musically, but I was only going to do movies that were composed by people who had composed for Star Trek.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon. I'm not surprised.
That is an uncanny Uhura.
Continuing mission.
Yeah, and of course, another great thing is when it's it's all finished and you look at it and go, yeah, we made that together. Yeah, that's one of the greatest moments. And people respond to it and say, oh, that's pretty well made. The effects are great. The actors are great, even though they're Dutch trying to speak English, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Let's take a look at all of our shows. You get new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week here on Trek FM, and it's all possible thanks to the folks who help us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Check it out. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber if you're not already. Every little bit helps us keep distributing these podcasts, creating them, giving us the bandwidth to do so. It costs a lot to produce a network of this size anymore, and so it all helps us out tremendously. Now, we have associate producers we need to thank who support TTJ especially on the network, and those lovely people are Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, and Bruce Lish, and Dante Hopkins. That's a lot of people. Whew. And I especially want to thank Aaron for designing our show art for this week, for envisioning a JJ-versed TTJ Voyager. So thank you, Aaron, for doing that. Go write a review for us on iTunes, because that helps us out tremendously in terms of getting searchability, the rankings, all these weird algorithms that make iTunes work. iTunes is the way that most people still, to this day, always have and probably always will get their podcasts. So help us out with that. We love hearing your reviews, and if you give us 5 stars, we'll give you a shout out on the show. Well, this was a lot of fun, and we've been talking for a long time about the JJ-verse, but we've got to move on to next week, and I think we have another cool idea coming down the pipe. So what are we doing?
We had such a great time doing this a couple weeks ago that you and I insisted that we do this again, and what we did for Captain's Holiday from TNG for Voyager, we're going to do again from a different series where we take an episode, whether it's from TNG, Deep Space Nine, TOS, or Enterprise, and then make it, remold it, rewrite it into what it would look like if it was a Voyager episode. But we're not going to tell you what we're going to do, so you're going to have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!